Welcome to season 4 of the Willing Equine Podcast, the podcast where we chat about all things horses and being the best horse people we can be for our horses. My name is Adele Shaw. I'm a certified behavior consultant, and my passion is for creating positive relationships between horses and people. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the TWE podcast. Today, I have very special guest, Jana Dewey. Jana Dewey is a behavior consultant for Behavior Vets located in Colorado, where she specializes in working with animals who have behavioral sensitivities. Prior to working with pets, Jana was a zookeeper for 10 years at different facilities within show and education roles. She has always had a passion for working with equines and grew up working at different barns, learning to ride various disciplines such as jumping, dressage, barrel racing, and polo. Jana loves to work with horses out on the trails and to help them feel comfortable in a variety of situations. She is earning her master's degree in counseling through Regis University in order to help those with sensitive animals. She also has a graduate certificate as an equine assisted mental health practitioner and is a certified professional bird trainer. Jana is currently accepting equine clients both virtually and within the areas of Colorado and in-person sessions too. Well, thank you, Jana, so much for joining us today. If you could introduce yourself and share a little bit about yourself, we would love to hear just more about like who you are and what you do and just kind of expanding on everything that I just shared.
Sure. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on here. I'm really excited to talk about this topic. So the reason why I'm really passionate about it is because I work for a company called Behavior Vets, and we specialize in working with animals with behavioral sensitivities. So that could be fear, aggression, separation anxiety is really big right now, especially with dogs. And we work with species all across the board. And so that's my job right now. I got into this type of training from working with zoo animals. So I was a zookeeper leading up to this for about 10 years. And I was within show and education settings, so I got to do a lot of training for all these big behaviors and kind of showing off these animals' natural behaviors. And within that, got to do a lot of other behaviors like cooperative care work. And that was really big. And that's kind of where I got my love for positive reinforcement. And how it translated to horses is I grew up, like I'm sure many of us, I grew up learning from different trainers at different barns, and I grew up with a few horses, and I've always loved being around horses, and I delved into training from an early age. I've always loved behavior and training, and so I got my start working with horses, and I had that start in natural horsemanship and that pressure release mode. And so when I got into zookeeping and saw the effect that positive reinforcement has and giving choice and empowerment can have on an animal, that's where I got really interested in how can that work for horses. And it's all the same basics, but it hadn't really been applied as much. And so that's kind of where my passion is right now, is working with horses using choice and empowerment and positive reinforcement to help them feel more comfortable with their environment. So that's a little bit about where I've been and how I got to where I am.
Well, very cool. How did you get involved with Behavior Vets and, you know, just diving into that side of things? And how did your history and all the different things kind of lead you to that point where you wanted to start working with vets?
Yeah, good question. So I had a very reactive dog a few years ago, and she was the one who got me really, she kind of threw my life in a spin a little bit because I never had a dog like her before. And she would see a dog from yards away and just start, you know, barking, lunging, growling. And so I had to learn how to work with her. And because she was a little different than the other dogs I've had, I really learned a lot from her with behavior modification. So that's where I got my love for working with more sensitive animals. And I managed a boarding and training facility for dogs where we geared our whole program around dogs who couldn't really go to typical dog boarding facilities. And so I just got a passion for working with this population. And within that setting, that boarding setting, I saw the positive effects medication could have on an animal's behavior. So we would have an animal come in before medication who would just be over threshold the whole time, would be really cowering or on the opposite be lunging and growling. And they would start medication almost always along with training. And we would see such a major change in behavior, more so than the animals that weren't on medication. And so I saw the benefit of it. And I'm in school right now to become a counselor. So I'm really passionate about helping people just as much as animals. And I've seen medication help people as well. So I think seeing what the effect it has on animals, along with delving more with that side with people, I applied for behavior vets because I saw the benefit of working with vets who understood medication and how to help the animal with a combination of behavior modification and positive reinforcement training. So having that collaborative work, it's a really, really cool model. And I absolutely love it now that I'm in it. And I loved it even when I heard about it. So that's kind of what led me to behavior vets, is seeing the power of medication, proper medication, along with proper training, and the power that has and the effect it has on the animal.
I love that. And, you know, it's such a, this is becoming more, people are becoming more aware of the effects and the benefits and why we shouldn't be so hesitant to utilize this really useful tool for helping our dogs, but it's still such a new and underutilized area with horses. And there's so many horses that end up being sent to bad places. We'll just kind of define it as that because it's either training or they can't be fixed and we send them off. And There's this whole step that could be utilized. People don't even, sometimes we don't even realize it's there, or it has a lot of stigma around it. And so we don't want to, or, you know, there's lacking education and stuff and that. And even for myself, I've had behavior cases in the past before I did what I do now. And we went to euthanasia or selling the horses before even, it didn't even cross my mind that there would be another step that we could take, that we could try, you know, more. And it wasn't even a really available not too long ago. So this is just a new area. And I'm loving that we're getting to talk about this and bring awareness to this option that is available to people. And we're going to dive more later into the specifics of like when you might consider it, like how to find more information, et cetera, later. But I would love to hear more now about what that kind of collaboration looks like between you and the vets, because you're not a vet, but you understand equine behavior, and that's, you know, you have that passion for horses and you work with horses. So you're collaborating with vets to create this, like the next stage for certain clients that need it to help these horses in a unique way. And so I'd love to hear more about that collaboration, and especially from, even from my perspective, I'm curious about it too, because a lot of times vets don't know enough about it to even, like, even if I were to ask for them to collaborate with me, they wouldn't know enough about this for horses, and they're a little bit hesitant, or even completely, we'll just say no to even considering, let's try things. So I would just love to hear about that process and like how it works for you guys, and that learning journey you guys, I'm sure, have all been on working with horses.
Yes. Yeah. And horses are still, I mean, like you're saying, this is all fairly new. And I think with training in general, we just keep innovating and moving forward and trying things. And I think this is going to be one of those for horses, I hope, because it's getting more widely used for dogs. And like you said, there's a stigmatization around it. And it's the same with people, right? You know, there's a stigma around medication. And this happens all the time with my clients. If I have a dog who I feel would benefit from seeing a behavior vet, sometimes there are those conversations where they have this idea of what it'll look like. And it's around, you know, having that discussion. That's kind of the first step, is having a discussion. And that's kind of how it goes with the behavior vets. So on my team, there are a few different routes to go in terms of how we work with the client collaboratively. So one way is that they go specifically to see a behavior vet, because they're also primary vets. They're amazing. They know so much. So an animal comes in to see them and they're on behavioral medications, and more than likely they would also benefit with, in conjunction with, training. And So the behavior vet will reach out to one of the trainers and we will get them hooked up with both of us. And during that whole process, we're checking in with each other. So like, I'm trying to think of an example. There's so many. Like I have a client right now who they had an exam with their behavior vet and I wanted to fill her in on some of the behaviors I was seeing from the dog. Because they don't check in with them as often as I'm seeing them. So I wanted to let her know, these are the behaviors I'm seeing. Here's what is going on with this dog. Here's some improvements. Here's where we can continue helping. And they also are a huge part of that training plan. And so they'll adjust medications according to that as well as the client's experience. And so the other way is kind of flip-flopped, where they sign up for just training. And then us as trainers will say, we're not seeing as much progress, or we have criteria for when it's time to have that conversation of why we think would be beneficial for this dog to see a vet. So it can go both ways, but more than often they're working with both of us. So we really try. Some dogs don't need that medication, but most of our clients do, because again, we're seeing behaviorally sensitive animals. So if they are not seeing a behavior vet yet, we will reach out and say, let's have this conversation. And when they're ready, we'll get them on board with the behavior vet. So those are kind of the two big ways of how we work together.
Yeah. And then, and to clarify, like you just said, you're working with cases that already need, you know, they're sensitive animals and there's more going on. It's not just like basic obedience dogs are coming in and right. Right, we need to medicate. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the next, like we're going to a different level as far as the help that is needed for this animal to live its best life and to have a good quality of life. And that's really what this comes down to, at least from my side of things, is this, whether it doesn't matter the animal, but we're talking about, you know, this is a horse podcast, so we're going to talk mostly about horses, but I want that horse to have a really good quality of life. Like it's not enough that they're just surviving, or, you know, we want them to thrive. Right. And sometimes there are things that are uniquely needed for that individual that will help them have that quality of life. And not every individual needs that. It's not this thing that we're just dishing out for, you know, just for fun. Like it's specifically needed to benefit that individual to help them live their best life.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the same with any species. There's, you know, some of us are born with certain more chemicals in our brain that create more stress or anxiety. And so it's very individual dependent. And also we want to take into account the certain species. So, you know, hyper arousal looks a little different in horses than with dogs, right? Mm-hmm. And so having that criteria and knowing the species is really important. And like you said, it's very individualized. So that's why we really work. It's really good to have a trainer on board to kind of see their progress and kind of be able to translate those behaviors. So that way we can accurately tell the vets what we're seeing. So then we can change the medication to help each individual. And because there's no concoction for each one, right? We have to really see what medication works with this animal, what amount works for this one. So it's a really, really individualized process, but I've seen it work wonders and really help the animal's well-being. Like you're saying, that's what it comes down to. We want the animal to feel comfortable. And sometimes medication helps them get to the point where we can help them actually feel comfortable in a variety of situations that they might not be able to without that.
Yeah. And also, you know, there's so much research still happening in this area and it's so new in horses, especially. It's going to be ever changing. And sometimes, you know, what starts off working for an individual, maybe there's new information and later on down the road, it changes. So this is why I'm just bringing this up to express that importance of working with a vet, but also like a behaviorist or a trainer, like really closely. So we're watching the individual, we're tailoring it to that individual. And it's not just this blanket, like we're just medicating. Like it's such a precise and team-based effort to help this individual learner, the horse, feel comfortable and living its best life and thriving. Yeah, that's really cool. I love that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's pretty cool deal.
Have you found people to be really receptive to working with both a vet and a behaviorist or a trainer and just that conversation? Or we could talk about in general. I feel like probably you're going to say it's been a little bit easier with dog people. How's that been going with horse people?
Yes. Well, like you said, and as you're, you know, it's been talked about, you know, the horse world is catching up a little bit. And so I think having those conversations is going to be the first step. So talking like this and getting word out there that this is an option, that if you have a horse that you've had for years and you've really done everything in your power to do what you feel is best for this horse, you've had training, chiropractor, body work, you know, behavior vet might be a really good option for you, and to see if there's something medically that we can help this horse with. And that's where I kind of started. I mean, with any talk of medication, especially with the horse community, it's not out there. So people don't know. And so giving that information first, and again, having these conversations, I'm going to keep saying it over and over, is so, so important. And the more we talk about how it is a really good option is so helpful. And what is happening right now is we don't have as many horse case studies to go off of because, again, it's just not as out there. But we've seen so many successful stories with other species. Like I have a client right now, again, a dog, not a horse, who she started medication. And before the medication, she was scared of every noise. She was scared of thunder, wind, any noise really you could think of, to where she was scared to go outside because of it. We started her on medication. She is now not worried about noises. We could play any noise in the house and she is just like, oh, that's okay. And like fireworks were going off the other day and she was fine. And it was really because of that medication. And so the same could be said with horses. And we just need to keep talking and keep showing that it is a viable option for so many individuals. And it not only helps the animal, but it helps our well-being too, as working and living with these horses. Because if I go in and I have negative experiences with my horse every time, I'm going to get frustrated. It's not going to be that much fun for anyone. But we can get medication, see these little successes, and bring the horse to a point where they can think and learn. That's a cool moment. And we can have more of these if we see medication as a really good option to explore.
Okay, you made multiple points that I want to come and visit here real quick. So one of them was, you know, the sound sensitivity. So I love that example, okay, because it made me think of, I actually know I have a client who's been using a veterinary behaviorist and also a trainer behaviorist with her dog who's reactive. And she expressed to me that one of her concerns initially was that it was going to change the dog's personality, that the dog was going to be just like drugged. And I think people think of meds, especially when I'm thinking horses, most people think of that as immediate, it's like sedation, right? So they see their horses dopey and like falling over like the dentist or the vet, right? And they're thinking that's what we're talking about. And so I think it's so important to be getting that information out there that that's not the case. And I would love to hear more about your experience with it. And as far as it, how does it change temperament? How does it change personality? Is it going to transform the dog in any other way than what might be ideal, or horse in this case, but you know, your case study you mentioned was the dogs.
Right. No, that's the number one question I get every time this conversation happens is people are worried it's going to turn their animals into a zombie. And that is not the point of behavioral medication. There are instances it is helpful for the animal to be sedated, like at the zoo. We had animals that would get extremely stressed out under medical procedures, and we did not have time to train that through cooperative care. So it was more humane for them to be sedated. But that is an extreme example, an extreme, very specific situations. Really, the point of medication I tell people is to help your animal be able to be comfortable so they can think. When animals learn, they need to be under threshold, right? So for a horse that's probably in their paddock or in the arena with nothing much going on, they are in their routine. There's no elevated behaviors being shown, like kicking or bucking, things like that. And so what medication can do for a horse that is in that state more often than not, it helps them to stay under threshold so we can actually teach them behaviors and skills. So that is what medication can do for an animal. And a lot of times too, if we go to our primary vets, you talked about this a little bit, some primary vets will prescribe medications, but they're not behavior vets. So sometimes we do get medications prescribed for animals that do sedate them. And that's where a behavior vet comes in, because they are trained in medications and what each one does and how it can help the animal, again, stay under threshold and feel more comfortable so more learning can occur. That's one of the big reasons for, and one of the big helpful aspects of having an animal on medication is we can actually have an animal who can think and learn and can retain information.
Yeah, I love that. And that's such a really good way of explaining it, where we're just trying to help them get to a point, again, where they're thriving so that they can actually learn. Because if they're so fearful or so over threshold all the time, it's really hard to get them to that good learning place. And no real true or healthy or good learning happens from that place of like high stress and fear and all of that, except for probably more fear learning. And so getting them back to that place where they can be at peace, like in their own body and like in their environment, so they can learn something new, which brings me to the idea of, and this is kind of my interpretation of it, and I'd love to hear your, how you go about doing this. But I tell people all the time that if we were going to use meds, or in my case, that's oftentimes I'm using some sort of other thing, because I have a really hard time finding vets in my area that will do that. And so we're going to go into that topic later. But so for me, I'm using things that are more homeopathic or natural type soothing type stuff. So like calming stuff. And even then I sometimes have trouble getting people on board with that, which surprises me. I'm like, why not help them out? Anyway, I'm always telling them it's not a crutch. I imagine people probably think in their head, like, we're going to sedate them and then we're just going to like pretend they're well behaved now. Like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about getting them to a good place so that learning and training can happen. And potentially, well, the goal would be ideally to be able to wean them off of it if helpful. But I'm sure some learners, some individuals will need it lifelong. And you can tell us more about your experience with that. But have you been able to be successful with weaning some of the individuals that you work with off of their meds that they're needing?
Yeah, I have not, because I've been with the company less than a year, and these medications sometimes take some time. So I personally, we've talked about starting to wean off. And again, that's a conversation with their behavior vet. So if I'm seeing really good progress with this animal, we are at a good place and we've been there for a while and we're at the point of maintaining, then we can say, all right, let's talk to your behavior vet and see what their thoughts are on weaning off medication. And you talked about this really well about, you know, we can only go so far with what we can offer people, because I'm not a vet, so I can't say you should be on this, this, and this, right? That's where that collaborative nature of working with a behavior vet and being able to call or email them, be like, hey, this is the behavior I'm seeing now. What are your thoughts? And can we do anything with their medication? Some animals, like you said, do have to be on medication for their life, but maybe we can lower the dosage at some point. But I've definitely had, like the other trainers on the team have shared successes about, I wouldn't say success because it's each individual, an animal needing to be on a medication, but them feeling comfortable, that's a success in itself.
Yeah.
And so success is different on each animal, but there have been definitely cases where we get an animal to where they're comfortable, they can think, they have these skills, they are practicing it, we're getting good repetition, now we can wean off. And that absolutely happens. And I do want to say too, with medication, especially with horses, it's very individualized. Sometimes we do get side effects. So it's not saying, you know, we might have a horse who's tired, but then we talk to our behavior vet and we say, our horse is too tired, can we change this? And we look and see what we can alter so we can actually have a horse who's awake. Because over threshold can also mean they're too tired. And we can't get learning to occur when they're too tired either, sedated. And so we need an animal, like you're saying, medication is here to help an animal stay under threshold and awake and aware. but we need them to be in a state where they can retain information. And if they are too heightened or too tired, that's not going to work. And so behavior medication, once we get a good repetition of behaviors and we have the right dosage and we got them going, once we get them doing that behavior we want to see and we have some repetition, then we're going to go to our behavior vet and be like, as a trainer, this is what I'm seeing. Here's the behavior I'm seeing. We've been doing this. We've seen this behavior consistently for 3 months. What are your thoughts? Can we try to wean off? And they're going to let us know if that's a possibility, what they think, and if they can do that. And again, it's very collaborative. So they're going to let me know as the trainer, oh, we lowered this down. Let's watch their behavior. And so we're really checking in the whole time to see what is happening to the animal as we're changing medication as well.
I love that you mentioned that an animal having to stay on medication for their life isn't less of a success. It's actually a success in itself if it's working. Because
right.
Prior to that, we were obviously having a lot of problems and the animal was not doing well. They weren't thriving. And so just being able to find something that helps that individual is a success. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's a training protocol or a change in diet, or, you know, maybe it's body work that they needed or a different saddle or some meds. Like, it doesn't, all of those are on the same level. And if they help your individual learner, your horse, be able to thrive, that is in itself the success. Like, that is a success. Right. Now, it's awesome though, if we can wean off of it and they can still be thriving, cool. But if not, it's right. Okay. Like, that's what they need.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's just, medication is such a touchy subject, even for humans, right? We have our own conversation around behavioral medications, but it comes down to genetics a lot of times. You know, we just, some of us have different chemicals than others, and it really affects us, and medication can help with that. So if it's a long-term behavioral medication case, but we have an animal who is thriving on it, I feel like that's a huge win. Like you said, it would be amazing if we can wean them off, but it's also amazing if the animal has to stay on that medication, but they're, you know, showing really positive behaviors and they're able to engage in sessions and they're living their best life. Again, it comes down to that, the well-being of the animal.
And going back to what you mentioned earlier, which I also love, is the well-being and the experience of the other individual in the relationship. So the human, you know, we too are part of the relationship and have our life with our animals. So whether that's your dog or your horse or your cat or any animal, just like we have with other people. And it's important to value our experience in that too, in that relationship. And so it's not just about the animal thriving. It's also about us thriving too in that relationship. And sometimes one of us in that relationship needs a little bit of help to be able to make that happen, whether it's the human or the human learner, the other animal, or like the horse. And so I love that part of it too. That's such a huge aspect to it, and looking at the whole picture. And as trainers and behaviorists, this is what we do, right? We come in, and it's not just, I think a lot of people think of it, they probably think that I show up and I'm just training the horses and then it's, you know, success, go home, right? My job is much more complicated than that. There's so many more variables, because it's not just about the horse. Like, I can show up at your barn tomorrow and we can be having, you know, problem A or problem B, but I'm, you know, talking to the owner, caregiver, like, okay, what are your needs? Like, what's the environment like? Now, who else is in this individual's life? You know, what's going on? What's the antecedent arrangement? What's the management protocol? Like, what behaviors are we seeing? You know, how are you feeling today too? Because sometimes what the behaviors I'm seeing are actually stemming from, or a lot of times they're stemming from the caregiver and their actions, right, or how they're feeling, and so on and so forth. So it's so important to look at that big picture before we narrow completely down to like, it's this behavior and something's wrong with the horse, or, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, you said that beautifully. And that's actually why I'm getting my master's in counseling, because being in this, working in this population, I've seen so many, it brings out a lot in the people. It's very emotional for the people and very taxing. And I've seen burnout. And so It is a real thing. And what happens too, I've seen people get completely burnt out from training. Their animal's still over threshold 99% of the time. And whether that's a horse or dog, I've seen it in both. And, you know, they've done all this training, they've invested all this money in training or other remedies or tools, whatever that looks like. And we try them on medication and they see a change for the first time. And they're like, oh, okay, I can breathe a little because we have something we have success somewhere, right? And sometimes that's what it takes is there's a chemical imbalance somewhere is what it comes down to. And if we can help that chemical imbalance and get that dog or horse or bird or cat, whatever that species is, to think again and learn, it's just a huge sigh of relief for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's like it's giving you some breathing room so you guys can actually like coexist and have a good experience and a good relationship together. And why people are so resistant to that is a little bit of a question mark. But I mean, I get it too, because I'm not going to go too deep into it, but on the human side of things, I've had the same discussion come up, the same hesitation, right, the same worries, the same, like, it's going to change the personality. Yeah. There's so much unknown about it that I think it triggers some fear in us. And it's powerful stuff too. So it can't be done lightly. Like, you're doing it with the vet and there's lots of collaboration and talking and discussing and modifying and we're working. It's not a lighthearted subject. It's not like you just go to the feed store and pick it up. Like, this is a big topic. It's a big thing, but it is so useful and so powerful and necessary in so many cases.
Yes. And like you said, you know, it is a big topic and people have a lot of fear of that unknown. But when you have a team behind you, and that's what I tell my clients too, like, you have a whole team behind you. You have not only me, you have other consultants, because if I have question marks about any training, I mean, I have a whole team of trainers behind me, right? Who we can all bounce ideas off of each other and say, let's try this or that. I have the behavior vets behind me. You have your vet with you. And if anything happens in a session, I reach out to the vet, say, this is what I saw. What are your thoughts? So you have a whole team of support behind you. And I tell the clients too, to let me know how they're feeling throughout the process. And, you know, our team is really good at being sensitive to the human's emotion just as much as the animals. Because if I have a person who's really worried about it as well, we're going to take time to talk about it. And the behavior vet is going to take time to talk about that. And so we want to really think about like you've been saying, and you're saying it so well, like, everyone involved with the individual. So the whole family system, basically, we want to think of.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot to be overwhelming, which is, again, where that team comes into play. And for people who listen to my podcast regularly, you know, I'm big on having your team that works with you and your horses. That's the farrier, the vet, the body workers, your trainer, maybe behaviorist, maybe the veterinary behaviorist too. And it's you need that team. It takes a village to help a horse thrive. And it can seem overwhelming, but I think when you establish that good team, I know I've experienced this myself, it feels so much more doable. And it's not just you. You're not on an island by yourself trying to figure this out. There's so much out there. And there's so many people out there trying to help you because you've established that relationship and that team to work together. And it can be it's less isolating. But I think a lot of people, horse people, can feel very isolated and overwhelmed with their horse's behavior. And, you know, I'm a trainer, I'm a behaviorist, and I'm going to say, even though this is my profession, this is what I do, there are limits to what I can't. I'm pretty open about this. Like, I can't fix pain. Like, I can't fix pain with training. This is just not going to work. I can't fix dietary deficiencies with training and, you know, all and behavior consulting. I can't fix, you know, so many things. I'm also not going to be able to fix a chemical imbalance in the brain with training. It's not going to happen. It's just not possible. And so there are limitations to each of those areas of expertise. And it's so important that we're collaborative in this and that we're respectful of other people's specialties and that we know when we've hit a point where we need to bring another professional on board to our team. And which leads me into this next question I have for you, which is, you know, how can we I guess, what are kind of those marker points when you would say, okay, we need to talk to a veterinary behaviorist, and, you know, how can we help horse owners and caregivers know through your experience and what you would say, like, when is it time to look at veterinary help assistance in this?
Sure. That's a great question. And it can look, again, it could look a little different depending on the individual. Where I say, I think it is time to see a behavior vet or seek behavioral medication advice is when we have done training. A lot of people go into this saying, I want to try training first, and then maybe we can talk about medication. I get that a lot. They might be recommended to get behavioral medication from their vet, their primary vet, and they've referred them to us. But they, a lot of times I'll get clients to say, I want to try training first, and then let's see how it goes. I have had a few clients, we've had to stop training because their animal cannot think and learn. And that is the point where I cut in and I say, I think it's time to seek out behavioral medication. So when an animal is too over threshold to be able to retain information in a setting where they should typically be under threshold. So like, so for example, I have a friend right now who we've had this discussion, and she has had a horse for about 2 years now. He was a Mustang, a little bit on the fearful side, so he's a little nervous of people. So if people come up to him, he'll move away, which is typical of a new, young, worried horse. Where it's been getting atypical is she has been using positive reinforcement to try to get him from the pasture for 2 years, and he still runs away every time. And he is still very hypervigilant, even in his paddock. If anything changes in his environment, even if he's been in the same spot for 2 years, he hasn't moved. If there's a little bit of wind, he is extremely hypervigilant. He just goes from 0 to 100 really quickly, where over time he should have been able to adjust to that, especially with the type of work the owner has been doing with him. So that is a case where I say the horse seems to be a little too hypervigilant. He is not adjusting. We've been using positive methods with him to provide choice to him. And he still acts like every time he's never seen us before. So that is a horse who, from what I have seen, is too over threshold to be able to think and learn. And I've done training with him, and he can retain information sometimes, but for the most part, he has a really hard time settling and relaxing. And that is where he is a case where I told my friend medication might be a cool option for him. We've had this discussion again. There's that hesitancy, but it's about that discussion. And it's about helping him to stay under threshold longer, so we can get him to think and learn skills and feel more comfortable. And then if we get to a point where we can go get him with some treats and he's not running away from us every time, or I can walk him around his pasture and we are not freaking out at a branch that fell the night before, things like that kind of cue me into it's time to seek behavioral medication. And
so it seems for horses in particular, but I know this applies to other species too. And this is kind of where my brain went with it too. Like if I was going to visit that idea, these are the types of horses I would probably visit it with, is horses that are hypervigilant and just, they almost seem like they're uncomfortable in their own skin, like all the time, even when it's not in a training session, when they're just trying to live their lives, they just can't just live life. Like it's just not possible for them to do that. And that's such a terrible way to live. And that type of behavior does come from, or a lot of times it can come from physical pain. So they've got like chronic pain somewhere that's causing them to be hypervigilant. And I've seen that a lot. Sometimes though, with horses like that, you can't help them with the pain though, because of what's going on behaviorally. And so it becomes this chicken or the egg like cycle. It's very stressful because you're like trying to help them physically, but you can't provide them everything they need because of how they're living their lives, and they can't be comfortable. And then they're so protective of their bodies, and just goes round and round and round.
Right. And it affects so many other aspects. So if I go get that horse and he sees a new person, I'm holding him, he has his halter on, say if it's a veterinary visit and we're trying to look for pain. If this horse is hypersensitive to touch, And he is, let's say every place the vet touches, he is just moving away, or he's starting to kick out or try to bite because he's already over threshold and it's just getting him more and more over. It's going to be really hard to find out what that pain point is, right? Because everywhere he's just so sensitive to. And so if we can't get a horse to relax, like you're saying, if they can't be comfortable in their own skin behaviorally, that will affect other aspects of care and that collaborative care, to where the vet might be like, we are seeing pain here. The vet, that's the example I'm thinking of, is that it affects other terms of care. Mm-hmm. And so that behavioral aspect is so, so important.
Another type of case that kind of comes to mind might be one where the horse goes over threshold so fast, and it's not truly spontaneous, but it almost seems spontaneous, and it's highly dangerous when it happens. And it's such a, there's so many different variables that could trigger the horse to go over threshold. And so it's hard to manage. It's gotten to the point where managing the environment and the training is so restrictive, and it's not even possible anymore. Like, you could be the best of the best as far as management goes of the environment, but it's just not physically possible with the amount of variables that come with just living life. So that might be another one. I mean, does that sound about on track?
Yeah, absolutely. If I have a horse who gets so nervous so quickly and they just go over threshold, again, we can't get learning to occur. And that's the really important piece, is I need an animal to be able to relax and be under threshold so that they can think and learn skills. And it's really important, because once the animal gets over threshold, it's really hard for them to think. So we need to practice behaviors where they're comfortable, so when they're over threshold, they actually know what we're asking. It happens all the time. We see, it happens all the time with dogs. We see dogs barking and lunging and the owner's trying to get their attention and the dog literally zones out. And it's the same thing with horses. When I have a horse who, my horse did this when I first got him, we would go into the round pen and he immediately would start running circles. Mm-hmm. And so he wouldn't listen to me. He had no idea what I was trying to ask him because he really couldn't. And I just gotten him, so he didn't know me very well. I didn't know him. So we had to take a lot of steps back so I could teach him skills. So when he got to that point, he knew what I was asking. What I kind of compare it to, and this is what I tell my clients, is, so like right now in my office, I'm under threshold. If you ask me what 2 + 2 is, I can answer that really quick. I have a lot of practice with it. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm over threshold, for me, that's an airport. So if we're running through an airport and you're like, hey, quick, what's 2 + 2? I can get there because I have so much rehearsal with it. If you ask me to do a cartwheel while we're running through an airport, which I never, ever do, I can't do it because I've never practiced it. So that's where we need that behavioral medication for horses like you're describing that might be hypervigilant or get too worried about a variety of things and go from 0 to 100. So we can just get them to learn those skills, so when they get to that point, they know what we're asking.
What do you think about, I'm kind of asking for my own benefit here too. All of this has all been very beneficial for me as well. Some horses, and I work with a couple cases like this, where it's not let's put it this way. I think a lot of horse people are very familiar with the horse runs into the arena and just starts running circles, or the round pen, and they just won't stop, right? There's also the other thing that can happen, which is less common because horses tend to be a flight animal and they tend to opt for flight over fight. But some horses will redirect or direct onto you like a rage type aggression response. We're going to kind of label it aggression. Should they be, we'll just use the word triggered. I don't know what, it could be a variety of things. And I've worked with a couple horses like that, where that's what I mean as far as, yes, we're managing the triggers for fear for those types of horses, but then there's the other type of horse where we're having to manage the environment so carefully and so, but oftentimes the triggers are inconsistent and then the horse reacts with a self-defense type behavior and it's highly dangerous towards people. So that's, I kind of bringing this up as another possible time that it's time to call on in a veterinary assistance here for behavioral stuff?
Yes, 100%. And I've seen cases like this too, where if I walk up and even in protected contact, if I walk up to this horse and every time I see them, I give them a treat, not going in their space, I'm not doing anything, but say they still want to, they're like lunging, their mouth is open, or they're showing their hind. But if every time I go in there and I give them a treat, that behavior should change over time. Mm-hmm. If that behavior does not change, then absolutely we should call in a behavior vet. Or if it's a very dramatic response, then that might be time to be like, all right, we just need this horse to relax, even if it's just for like a month. So we can just get a different response happening and stop that rehearsal, help them feel comfortable. That's really what it comes down to. Because if I have a horse that's showing that big of a behavior towards me, they're really uncomfortable, really, really uncomfortable. And so if I can help that horse in that way too, that's a great gauge for when it's time.
Yeah. And the cases that are coming to mind that I'm just visualizing, almost always it's pain-based behavior, but the problem was getting them to the point where we could help them physically because they were in pain. Right. But if you can't approach the horse and work with them, then you can't help them feel better. So you need like an intervention to get them to that place where they can even think and learn so that you can help them with their pain.
Yes, that is huge, 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 huge. And I just had a client the other day, the horse goes into learned helplessness when their veterinary procedures, it's really common, but the horse just shuts down. And that is where we don't want a horse that's sedated or knocked out for trying to find pain, because then we're not going to see those pain responses either. Mm. So if our priority is to figure out a pain response, then behavioral medication for that horse is definitely a really good option. And then once we get the vet in and able to figure out if there's something else going on, then we go to our behavior vet and say, hey, we found this, or we didn't. What should we do with medication? What do you recommend?
Yeah, that's all really good. This is it's making me excited for where we're going. Like if the path going forward, I hope we start seeing a whole lot more of this. It would make my job a whole lot easier too.
It is very helpful. And I'm so excited to be able to be having these conversations. And I know our clinic is really excited to be talking about horses. I came on and we have really delved into trying to get more horse clients to show it as an option. So I am so excited to be having these discussions, and really, I hope people hear that this is a really good option for your individual horse if this resonates with you.
Yeah, I agree. I second that. But this brings us to kind of the big question, one of the final ones I have, but a really big one. This is not available to most people. It's just not available in their area. I have lots of vets in my area, but none of them do behavior vet work unless there are a few that do dogs. And I could talk to them about crossing over into working with horses. But just as far as your average vets who are wonderful at their job, but they don't specialize in this area. So what do people do? What are some of your recommendations? And, I'm going to say this, there just might not be an option for it, unfortunately, but maybe there are some ideas you have, how could people start to either encourage this or find it, or just kind of some suggestions you have?
Yeah. So there are two websites you could check out to see. They have search engines for veterinary behaviorists. So you could see if there are any in your area. So one is the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, and that is at dacvb.com. There is also the American Veterinary Science of Animal Behavior, and that is asvab.org. So they both have search engines, so you can see if you have any veterinary behaviorists in your area. If you don't, which could be possible because there aren't many out there, unfortunately, I hope there will be more, but it is limited right now. So something to do is you can check with your vet and see what their thoughts are, your primary vet. Again, a lot of vets will have more of the sedation but some are knowledgeable so that they can help you, even if it's just temporary help. I think the big thing is work us as, I guess this is more so for trainers and consultants, is we should be having conversations with vets and having a like you were saying, and I also agree, is having a team behind us and a team that works together and communicates together. Because the sign of a good practitioner or a good farrier vet is that they're going to refer you out to other people who have different expertise. You know, we're not going to go outside our limits of expertise, right? So me as a trainer, I'm not going to give you medical advice because I don't know that side of it well enough. Same thing with farrier work. I know the basics, but I can't give you in-depth information like a good farrier. So us as trainers and consultants, and two, even if you're not in that category, go ahead and have these conversations with your vet around you and say, do you have experience with equines? How do you feel about behavioral medications? And trying to have some people we can add to our team that can help us with behavioral medication and help us with other aspects. I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is trying to network with vets and find resources for our clients who might not know where to go. Maybe it might not be a veterinary behaviorist, but maybe we find a really good equine vet who has some knowledge of behavioral medications. Or we have a dog vet who does have more knowledge of behavioral medications, but not as much equine. But if we work together, then we kind of fill in those gaps. So that's kind of my recommendation.
Yeah, those are all really good suggestions. And I think too, just like you said, continuing to have these conversations and even just asking, like the demand and the supply kind of idea here is going to be in effect. Like the more we start asking, like as horse caregivers and owners, we start asking for more information on this, and we start asking for our vets and, you know, people to dive into their education and to provide us with more information, it's just going to start to grow. And the more we talk about it, it's going to continue to grow. And my hope too, a lot of times when I talk about stuff like this, is people who are listening, maybe they're young and aspiring professional, equine professionals, but they're not sure which area they're going to go yet. Maybe this piques their interest and we start to see this next generation grow up with and start to dive into these areas that we're just barely touching on right now. And so the next generation of, you know, equine professionals and stuff is going to be far more educated in this area and more interested and make it more readily available, which will be very exciting.
Yes. Especially as we're seeing such good results happening with other species. I'm hoping it's a matter of time before horses enter this conversation as a major aspect. And I'm hoping maybe this conversation or other conversations in the future, like you said, will inspire other people to pursue this, because it is such a helpful tool for us to have, are these behavioral medications.
And even for people who are not particularly interested in, you know, becoming vets themselves, or I don't know, maybe they have a different investment into this and they're, you know, this area is going to be pivotal and it's going to be so important in helping overall improve equine welfare. And, you know, we can talk about things like reducing the number of unwanted horses or the horses that are just floating, you know, in the system or are abandoned or sent to auctions or even sent to slaughter. We can talk about that all day long, but if we don't have solutions for the horses that don't fit the mold, we're going to keep hitting dead ends. Like there's nothing. We need this type of stuff. We need more of this. We need more understanding of equine behavior. We need improved. There's so many different areas. So we need an improved understanding of equine behavior across the board. We need improved understanding of equine, like biomechanics and body care and just all the body work and all that. We need improved nutrition. We need improved training standards and ethics and training and all that. So like those are all areas that we need specialists in, and we need improved education in, and we need to be pumping out that information just like more and more and more. But this is another area, because even when you, just like we were just talking about, you can be going through all of those things and there's still a problem. And that's because we haven't even really touched the brain yet and the chemicals and all of that going on. And this is this area, and we need it to fit into that puzzle to improve the greater overall equine welfare and reduce the number of horses that are going to not so good places and ending up living terrible lives because of no fault of their own. They didn't choose to be that way.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love everything you're saying. I know it's overwhelming to think about where we're at with the horse community and like where, but it's really inspiring and I'm really excited. I think this is a, like you're saying, this is a really cool point. I'm really excited to be a part of this time because I think we're learning so much about horse everything. And I think we're recognizing that there's more out there that we can utilize if we just keep exploring and talking and questioning. And I think this is such a cool time. And I think if we just keep having conversations and discussions, we're going to keep innovating and we're going to get to a good place.
Yeah, we're trailblazing right now. And we've been in the horse world, it has been trailblazing. I try and remind people too. I mean, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, we were not anywhere near where we are now. So it's just going and keeps getting better in so many ways. So I'm really excited about where we're going from here.
Yeah, training is just always changing. And like I always tell people, who knows what we're going to say looking back 50 years from now, you know, like it's just one of those fields, training in general, but especially horse training right now, it just keeps moving along. So I'm really excited and I'm really excited to be having these conversations.
Well, very cool. Well, I have loved having this conversation with you. So many fantastic points and just jumping off points, really. Like people I hope are listening and then are able to go talk to their vet and go talk to their trainers and just start having the conversation. Even if you don't have a vet behaviorist in your area, just having that conversation is just really important for moving forward and knowing what to do next and just realize that this is an area, this is another option for people. And anyway, I just loved having this whole conversation. So thank you so much for that.
Yes, thank you. This has been so wonderful. And I'm just so excited. Like I keep saying, I'm just excited to have these conversations. So I really appreciate this. This has been awesome.
Well, great. I loved having you on the podcast. And how could my listeners, you know, reach out to you if they want to ask more questions or learn more or just basically get in touch with you?
Sure. So if you would like to get in touch with me, you can email me at Janna, J-A-N-N-A at behaviorvets.com. I do offer services, in-person services in Colorado and virtual. So if you want to talk more about veterinary factors, or if you want to talk about behavior vets or get set up, just feel free to reach out with questions. And there's more info on the Behavior Vets website about me and our services. So you can reach me or that site at behaviorvets.com. And there is a free webinar on our website for learning about positive reinforcement horse training. Because if you follow Dell, you're probably interested. So if you want a little bit other basic info, that's another resource for you.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at your website now because I tend to multitask and there's really cool, like, are these all free presentations? Like, okay.
And we did just put one up and it is about behavioral medications and specific ones. So if you want to really learn about some widely used behavioral medications, we did just do a webinar on that.
Is that the A Dose of Hope Part 1 and 2?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to be watching that. So
yeah, it's pretty cool. You can find all of our webinars on behaviorvets.com. We do have quite a few free ones, but we have a few ones that you pay a little extra for, and they go more in depth on those topics.
Okay. Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much. I will be putting all this information in the show notes. So please, if you're listening, feel free to check out that so you don't have to try and listen and copy it into the search bar at the same time. Thank you so much, Janna, for joining us today. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Yes, thank you so much, Adele. This has been amazing. And yeah, looking forward to chatting with you more.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, I would love if you left us a review on wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more, head to our website, thewillingequine.com, where you'll find a bunch of links to our different social media platforms. We have Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, pretty much everything. We also have our blog, our training services, and the TWE Academy, where you can enroll in the foundation course that opens a few times a year. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to chatting with you in the next episode.